Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today's episode is with Ali Abbasi, creator of AI for Work, a 3 times weekly AI-focused newsletter and AI prompt library. Ali, to be clear, is no longer affiliated with AI for Work. He sold it to an undisclosed buyer for an undisclosed sum at the beginning of 2024, after having worked on it for only half a year, which is certainly the fastest zero-to-acquisition newsletter story I have ever heard. I spent an hour speaking with Ali about using TikTok collaborations to attract newsletter subscribers, his ingenious lead magnet strategy, how he ended up selling his newsletter so quickly, the next newsletter he plans to start, and plenty more. As always, thank you for listening and enjoy. For the listeners, tell me, who are you? What do you do? And why are we talking to you for Creator Spotlight?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so who am I? My name is Ali Abbasi, and I'm a creator. My day job is growth marketing. I work specifically on e-commerce brands. So I work with an organization that manages about 13 different brands, and I focus on growing them. I came from the brand side, and then the reason why we're talking is because I recently sold a newsletter that I built. It took me about 6 to 7 months. I started building the newsletter in public on my LinkedIn. I shared pretty much on a weekly basis where I was at with it, what I was doing. So it only makes sense to finish it off with a story about the end of it, or the end of my part in it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I love the building in public thing too. I love that approach. I respect it. And I think I interviewed somebody a few weeks ago who that's kind of her thing. She's building in public, and you know, Beehive CEO Tyler, he's doing that. There's so many people, I think it's becoming more and more of a thing. So the idea of like, what is a creator is something that I'm obsessing over, thinking about every day as I do this. And as in like, who should I interview next? Like, will the audience like enjoy them? How do I, you know, figure out the angle? And yesterday I interviewed this guy, Andrew Huang, he's like a YouTuber musician with like over 2 million followers. And he just published this book, Make Your Own Rules. And I read it and it was good. And one thing that struck me from it is like, he came from this musician artist background, and the book is a lot about like kind of speaks to create like traditional creatives, whether it's an artist, musician, whatever. And it's kind of like teaching them basic professional business marketing principles. And I know you studied marketing. I have a marketing background as well. And so I think it's interesting where like, and I know I'm rambling now, but like a creator, a lot of definitions, but like a creator is a media company is kind of one of the definitions I'm coming around to. But it's interesting. We're like, not to say you're not a creative person, like a writer, et cetera, but you came to it really with this like marketing background and marketing knowledge baked in, which is so different than somebody who comes from like this purely creative vision baked in. Like, and again, I think like that it's not like one or the other. It's a bit of both, but, yeah, I don't know. Do you resonate with that? Like, do you think you came from a marketing angle, looking how to apply your marketing principles to like a personal project?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I listened to like my first million with the Shane, the guys that run it, and I think a lot of people who started newsletters have listened to that and kind of got inspired. But I think only that really targets a niche group of people who are interested in entrepreneurship and ultimately building something. So I think a creator, in my opinion, is somebody who is actively creating versus consuming. And it's so easy to consume. It's so easy to get trapped in consumption. But to like take that risk to actually build something or to put yourself out publicly and do something like that, I think that's a creator. It doesn't mean you have to be super successful. It doesn't mean you have to like achieve a certain target. But like, I think somebody who just puts new information out into the world, I would consider them a creator.
Yeah, I like that. So the definition that like I kind of set for myself a few weeks ago before I'd done a bunch of interviews, and it still kind of holds, but I'm starting to change it. I need to reevaluate it. But it's like a 3-pronged thing where, and they're kind of ranked. So number one is a person who is consistently creating content and putting it out online for an audience. Number two is it's an unmediated connection between the person and their audience. So like a journalist might have, you know, a newsletter that is just theirs and they're a creator in that capacity. But if they're just a journalist publishing a column in the New York Times every week, not a creator, because it's mediated by an editor, by a business, by all these interests. And third is they're monetizing, whether it's directly through like a paid subscription or selling courses or or even just like, you know, to get ahead in your career and you're like trying to build a public presence, like that one obviously is much more loose. But yeah, that's, I don't know, that's kind of the definition I've gotten to. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. I like the journalist who is currently actively working and then sets aside their own project. I feel like the risk on that end is like, say you work for the New York Times, but you have your own newsletter. If you write something incorrect in the New York Times, they're going to blame the New York Times and then you. But if you do it in your own newsletter, they're blaming you. So yeah, it's interesting. It's super interesting.
Ooh, yeah. So that's actually something another thing I'm thinking about a lot is like this idea of like the New York Times has a ton of editorial rules and principles and et cetera. Whereas, you know, anybody writing a newsletter might have like an idea of what they will do, what they won't do, what they will say, like a style guide, but probably none of it is like written down or codified in any other way.
Totally.
But I'm curious, like when you were doing AI for work, which maybe after this we should get into what that was and et cetera.
For sure.
When you were doing that, did you have like, how did you conceptualize your accountability to your audience? Or like, did you write that down? Yeah. Or was it just all in your head?
I knew the main thing that I wanted to do was just provide value. I knew that if I could provide value, people would share the content, and that would be the, I focus on that being the most important channel for growth. It's like, if I could do something that actually benefits people, it would be so much easier to grow this thing than doing something that looks a little more generic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, I do lots of user polls, tons of emails between me and my users. I used to, like when I first started, I sent an email to every single person that subscribed. And I was just like, hey, I'm your new best friend in AI. Like, yo, what are you working on? What are you doing? And that just like, it skyrocketed the number of people who joined, who like added me on LinkedIn. I actually had real conversations with real people, met so many people in the AI space. But yeah, just kind of got a grasp of like what people are actually working on or what they're interested in.
That's awesome. I want to jump into that, but I also don't want to get ahead of myself here. Going back, so a second ago, you talked about, you know, listening to My First Million, and I think I've interviewed about 10 people for this series so far, and 3 or 4 of you have said, I was inspired to start a newsletter by My First Million. So let's go back to like, let's talk like the full AI for Work story, and let's start at the beginning though.
So, yeah.
You know, you're listening to the podcast, My First Million, and you're like, I want to start a newsletter. Where do we go from there? And why, actually, why was it so inspiring? Was it the exits? Is it that it's like a lottery you can win through hard work? What is it?
I'm employed full time. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, right? So it's like, and I've always overthought the process. But when they started talking about newsletters and they started talking about like just the overall benefits of it, the ease of getting one started, how fast some of them move, that's when I started to get interested in it. Because my initial thought was like, no way, our newsletter is crushing it in 2023. But then as I just consumed more content and started subscribing to more newsletters, I was like, okay, there's real value here. You're definitely building a community. So it was just such a low friction opportunity to start. It costs very little to get started. I could get my first 2,500 subscribers, not pay anything for the platform. So like from an idea perspective, there was no barrier to entry. I was ready to go. I was already interested on the topic that I wanted to do. So I would say that was what enticed me. It was like, I saw the opportunity. They validated it by just talking about it. I started to do more research on specifically the hustle that Sam started. And I subscribed to it. I paid for it. And I was like, damn, this is a really good product. Like, so then that just inspired me. And it was just like, okay, there's such a low-hanging fruit. The trend around AI is so big right now. And I personally am so obsessed with it. Like it just makes natural sense for me to do so. So yeah, I just gave it a shot.
So talking about the trend with AI, I interviewed somebody for a newsletter for the issue that came out a few weeks ago. This guy, Martin Crowley,
yeah, AI tool. Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said something, that was interesting. Cause to me, it's like, you know, when something is so trending, it's like risky to start in it because there's so much competition. And he said that like, I think he started in March of 2023, was it? And he said, if he'd started just 2 months later, doesn't think it would have worked. You know, that proven wrong by the fact that you started like 5 months later, maybe not 5 months, but you started a few months later and it paid out for you. So, or it worked out for you. So like, why, what was it like? You knew you were entering such a crowded field. What were you,
yeah.
How did you deal with
that? I knew I was entering into a super competitive field, and I read that article. Fantastic job on that article. Amazing job to Martin. Like, that's epic. I after I read it, I was like, damn, I shouldn't have sold. I should have monetized this thing harder. Okay, so what I saw was, I saw that they were all growing pretty quickly, like just from their public posts on Twitter and so on. But then I subscribed to so many of them, and I honestly just wasn't impressed with the quality. I thought it was a lot of just like summarization, which was totally cool. But like for somebody who's on Twitter for most of the day, it just wasn't high value to me. And I was thinking to myself, because like I was using ChatGPT a lot at this point. Especially from a marketing perspective. And when I would talk to other people, they would tell me that they're using it a lot too. And then I would compare the work that I'm getting and what they're getting. Wow, you're not using it right. So I felt like I had something that I could share with people. And then I was quickly proven wrong. Like my content wasn't that good. So then I had to reiterate it and improve it and improve it and improve it. And then ultimately I landed on something that was worthwhile. So I ended up creating like my own style of prompting. That ended up being super useful, and it ended up like helping a lot of people get some really high quality work out of ChatGPT. So I felt like, hey, if I could do something a little bit better than summarizing content, maybe talking about prompting, maybe talking about the techniques that I'm learning, it would be of higher value. And then it ended up being proven that was the case. So I think the trend, 100%, you should be going after the trend, right? It just makes the what's the saying? A rising tide lifts all boats. It's so much easier to be successful when there's more demand than supply. And the opposite is also true.
Yeah. A couple of things there. One, like I agree with you that like maybe it's intimidating, but at least like when there is so much out there, like, you know what the bar is that you have to surpass. And it's like, okay, like I just know I have to put in like X hours of work every day or every week or whatever to like make the thing that's better than that. So it's like, I know how far I have to go. It's just like, am I willing and able to go there, like push there, which no, not always the case. But so how long did it take you to go from like, okay, I like AI and I want to start a newsletter, but it's not working out. Like I'm trying and it's nobody cares. How long did it take to get to people caring and like getting your first, let's talk about it in terms of like getting your first subscriber and then getting your 10th subscriber, your 100th. And then like when you knew like, all right, I've got it locked.
For sure. Okay, so I first started and I had a whole different name for the whole thing. It was called Work AI. I just started by posting on LinkedIn. I was just like, hey, I'm starting this newsletter. I'm going to talk about AI. And I kind of just copied what I saw other people doing in the sense of like summarizing information. And my LinkedIn reach was so low. Nobody subscribed. And my wife didn't subscribe. My best friends didn't subscribe. And I was like, okay, clearly this isn't worthwhile for anybody. And then I think it was like, I listened to two videos that that really just like kind of shifted my mindset. The first one was an old Peter Thiel video from like way back in the day. And he was talking about how AI is going to be disruptive, but it's going to be like not that important unless they can figure out a use case around work. That I was like, damn, a work use case makes a lot of sense. And like work, I've already had this one called Work AI because I was in marketing and I was using it almost daily. But I was like, what if I could figure out other people's work, like if ChatGPT can do other people's work. And then the second one was just going back to some old Hormozy videos that were in my playlist, and his videos around like I'm losing my train of thought here, but like the irresistible offers.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. So just like how do you create an offer that is like stupid to say no to? So then I was like, okay, the demand is going to be around work, and if I just talk to my audience and figure out what people are struggling with, it's like, how do I actually use this for work? That's when it kind of struck me. It's like, if I can figure out how to build a lead magnet that makes it easy for people to give their email to me, I don't have to post on social. I don't have to have a large network. And I could get them to come to me. And then that's when it took, I would say, about a month of like lots of sleepless nights, a lot of weekends. Going through, I think I probably spent about $1,000 in API credits, like with OpenAI, trying to figure out this method of prompting. But then once I got it, I was like, oh shit, I got something good here.
I mean, a month and $1,000 isn't really that bad to like prove out a business idea ultimately, right?
For sure. It's definitely not. But I would say I started with a shoestring budget. It was an experiment. I had a new baby at the time, so my wife was like, yo, really? Like, you're really going to spend this much time on something that doesn't make any money, that you have no idea how you're going to grow it? So yeah, it was definitely, I would say, a risk in time, but I'm glad it ended up working out.
Yeah, $1,000, you know, you could have bought a nice fancy new car seat or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wasn't going to ask. Okay, yeah, so when we were first emailing, you mentioned, like, this TikTok thing that helped you grow a lot, which I'd love to hear more about that. Yeah. Because to me, like, the idea of, like, using TikTok to grow news, like, TikTok is just notoriously a difficult platform to convert unless you're, like, selling consumer goods, or now there's TikTok Shop, etc. So how did you use TikTok to get people to subscribe to your newsletter, and how many subscribers did you drive with that?
Okay. So I started out, like, I was like, okay, I need to promote my content. I created my own TikTok channel, and I just was so bad at creating content, specifically like video content. There were people actually commenting, they're like, hey, you should improve your speech or your tonality on this. And I was like, oh man, this is embarrassing. So what I did is I just started DMing all the top creators in the space. And then ultimately, there was this one guy, his name is Savity Digital. And he ended up commenting on one of his videos, because he was talking about prompting. And I was just like, yo, that prompt isn't very good. Like, you should check out this website. At this point, I've already created the site, and I'm just trying to share the website with others. And then he ended up responding, and he was just like, oh, damn, like, that's amazing. He ended up making a video about it, like, within an hour. And the video just immediately took off. He was just like, these are the best prompts I've ever seen. You have to check it out. He showed a quick example. And his channel, I believe at the time, had about 7,000 subscribers. And the video ended up getting about 500,000 views in like 48 hours. So then from there, I would say, like, it just started taking off. I think the best day was probably about like 1,500 people signed up on that initial first day. And then I was like, oh, damn, I got to keep doing this. So I just started messaging way more TikTokers. No, honestly, nobody else did anything. It took maybe about another week or two where another guy saw a post, came across it. And then I messaged him. He ended up making a video about it and ended up getting another 300,000 subscribers. Sorry, another 300,000 views. So it was just taking that approach of just like reaching out, saying, hey, like, you should definitely check this out. But I don't think it's like, well, one, I don't think TikTok is a bad platform to promote on. And I was super surprised by the caliber of individuals who signed up through it, like executives, professionals, so people from all walks of life, from all different geographies, signed up through TikTok. So then I just doubled down on that. And then I ended up just talking to those users, figuring out what they were kind of using it for, and then started building it. That continuously reached out to people on TikTok. It was super hard to get anybody to do anything about it. But then Savity Digital, he ended up doing a second video, which once again went viral, and ended up getting like 400,000 views. And those two TikToks that he did, along with like a few others that others came across with, just helped the whole thing grow. People started searching the website on Google, and as a result, the website's organic traffic across the board started to go up. And then I started to, when people signed up for the website, I would ask, like, hey, where did you find it?
Manually, it started, right? Off, or did you have a survey?
Yeah. I had like, on my sign up sheet, I had like, you have to put your name, your email, your job title, and you have to give me why you, like, how you figured.
Did you make it required to sign up?
I did.
Had, okay, yeah.
I did. And then it started off being all, like, all TikTok. So then after that, I started noticing a lot more SEO started happening just naturally from other people searching AI for work. And then from there, it started going to, like, I started to hear about it from conferences. People at work told me about it. My boss told me about it, colleagues. And then I was like, okay, phew, this is doing exactly what I hoped it would do. But yeah, TikTok was the initial driver that really pushed it. And till the day that I sold it, there were still people coming through from those TikToks.
Wow, that's really impressive. Besides TikTok, what else worked for you? Like, what were the other levers you were pulling that really worked?
Yeah, so after TikTok started to take off there, the second thing was just SEO. So because I had the website as my main driver, I started to make content just like through blogging. And my strategy there was just like, how do I go after the long tail keywords for the different categories that I have prompts for? So there would be articles about like lawyers, how to use ChatGPT to write a contract, how to use ChatGPT to create a lesson plan for teachers. And those long tail keywords to this date are still ranking really well and are driving a ton of traffic. So I went long tail, and I personally think it's the initial boost of people searching AI for work from those TikTok videos that helped Google index it and figure out that the site was relevant. SEO was the second driver. And then from there, I started to try to optimize things like referrals. But I wouldn't say that it was like a major driver. I think I could have continued to work on that.
Now I have to search AI for work in Google and see what pops up. Because it's like such a obvious, it's such an obvious thing to search. Is AI.work for AIforwork.co? That's what it is?
That's the one.
Cool. I have to admit, I looked into the newsletter, but I hadn't actually looked at this. This makes so much more sense. My question now then is like, what? So you've got this site that's this archive of like of prompts you engineered and stuff. You've got the site, and then you've got the newsletter. What's the relationship? Did the newsletter come first, or was the website first? How did that work?
The newsletter came first, but I didn't get any subscribers. I got a few, a couple friends, a couple contacts across LinkedIn. But once I realized that, then I was like, okay, I need to create lead magnets. So if I create a lead magnet, where am I going to put it? I was like, I could put it on Beehive and just like create some sort of like web page there. But if I create a resource that I build online, I could go through SEO. I could share it in many different ways. I could put it in directories and so on. So then I just created the website. I created it on Webflow. And I ended up putting a sign up sheet. And then I connected the whole thing through Make, through the Beehive API. It was a little challenging at first because this would be like one of the first things that I built. But that's how it ended up working out. So I was like, I need to build something that can get people to give me their email. So then the irresistible offer is just like, if you're an employee at a company and you know that ChatGPT is going to save you time, which everybody's telling you, it's simply one click of your job title and you're going to get a library of prompts. I think that's enough for people to give an email out. And then from there, it's just like, can I write newsletters where they're going to like it enough to stay subscribed and to like engage with it? And that's the part where I put a lot more effort in after I built the website.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Because looking at the website, it's like, it's great and so rich with information. And like, it's one of those things where like, I always, whenever somebody signs up for Creator Spotlight and they ask me like, but they're like, hey, I'm starting this newsletter. I have this idea. Like, do you have any advice? My number one piece of advice is always like, well, there's two. One is like, figure out a niche, like a very specific niche. And then the second is just do it like Nike style, you know, like you literally just start. And then maybe a few weeks into starting, you're like, oh, I should start a website. And then maybe 5 months later, you know, somebody buys your website and your newsletter. It's like, because you just started a newsletter about a thing you were interested in. Like,
totally.
You don't know until you go. Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. I was doing a ton of research in that earlier stages when I was like, okay, there's clearly an opportunity here. And there was a creator spotlight on a gentleman by the name of Saeed, who runs, I believe, Superpower AI. And I found out that he started his newsletter through a Chrome extension. So he has a Chrome extension that basically adds a user interface on top of ChatGPT. And he ended up getting like 400,000 subscribers in a year. And I read his creator spotlight and I was like, okay, clearly I'm not the only person thinking like this. And at that point I was like, okay, this is going to be the right approach. But through this process, like I've had the opportunity to talk to so many other newsletter operators. Creating a lead magnet is probably one of the most important things for an early stage newsletter. If they're not going to be dedicating time, energy, and effort towards advertising, just think deeply about what your user can't say no to and make their lives a little bit easier with a resource. And that resource will get shared amongst community groups. Like Shopify has a channel on YouTube called Learn with Shopify. And they had a video about ChatGPT and they just mentioned AI for work as one of the ways to do really well. And I was like, I've never mentioned it to them. I've never talked to them. But they would have never done that if it was just like a basic landing page.
That's amazing. Can you talk more just about lead magnets? Because I imagine some of our listeners might not know what a lead magnet is. What is a lead magnet?
It's providing a resource, a free resource in exchange for an email.
So why did you make the decision to do this on Beehive as opposed to like Substack, ConvertKit, any of those other ones?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it, man. I was following Beehive for some time, and like I've been just watching Tyler's posts across LinkedIn and all other channels. So I honestly didn't even think about it. I love the design that the team was doing. I love the overall aesthetics, the website. My initial thought was like, I don't like Substack, like the way it looks. I just didn't like that. A MailChimp, I've had experience using like a MailChimp or like other emails just through my work. And I didn't want to build this on Klaviyo. I definitely didn't want to build this on a MailChimp. And Substack, it just wasn't even a question, man. It just like, yeah, Beehive looks like a modern platform.
No, I agree. I've used a bunch of the other MailChimp.
But also pricing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What you said, the first 2,500.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So more about the newsletter and like the actual design of the newsletter, the sections, the concept, how you came up with that, I want to give you kudos for the progress bar design, like as like your
note
rule break. Yeah. I really like that. Maybe that's been done. I don't think I had ever seen it as such. And obviously you scroll through, any website these days and there is like a progress bar, but I don't think I'd ever seen anybody convert it to email. So how did you come up with that? And like, how did you come up with like the newsletter design structure?
I would say that the design from like the first one to the last one, completely different, and it just kept improving. But I can't take credit for the progress bar. That was inspired from Yellow Brick Road. So it's another newsletter in the finance space, which is one of my favorite newsletters. They do such a good job. I reached out to the creator on that one. Super nice guy. But I think what he did with his newsletter was just amazing. He designed it so nicely. He's gamified it to a degree where it's like, I'm assuming improves the engagement significantly. But after just looking through, I would say hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of newsletters to see like what designs I like, that's where I got the progress bar.
Question about using AI for work. Obviously, yeah. You used AI for the images and such. Did you use it in the writing production? Like, how did you make sure? How did you make sure to do it in a way that like felt fresh and not like somebody just putting in a prompt and copy pasting whatever?
Honestly, I didn't. I didn't use AI to generate the actual content. I don't think that it's ready for that, right? Like, it's just the ChatGPT itself. Maybe like the new tools might be like Anthropic's new Claude, but everyone knows when you're using AI for it. So like, there was a tweet I read a while back where it's like, "Hey, in the world of AI, tweet like you text to stand out." And it's like, okay, conversational tone, and that's so hard to get right with ChatGPT. So the only way that I ended up using like AI in the content production standpoint was just editing the content. I love Beehive, but the spelling and grammar check thing does not work very well. So I had to just created a GPT that edits my content. And I still find spelling errors, and it makes me cringe when I do so, but it is what it is.
You got to just like let the spelling errors go. I personally don't use AI in my writing, but like, I'll, especially like when I do this, I've tried to use it to clean up interview transcripts before, and it just butchers it. Like, as much as I try to like, please like only remove or whatever it is, I like, it always just changes the meaning. But anyways, totally. neither here nor there. moving on, do you have any specific tips that you would give people who also write newsletters? Like one or two things that are like, I always like to include this little steal this tactic section in Creator Spotlight. What's the tactic people should steal from you?
Personally email 5 subscribers a day, like at the very minimum. Say if somebody responds to your poll, ask them more questions. If somebody says something negative about your poll, ask them how it could be better. But I think ultimately your end goal is to figure out how to get somebody to recommend your newsletter to somebody else. That's genuinely what you're trying to figure out. And I like just getting into the space and connecting with so many creators in the space now. I talk to them and I'm just like, oh my God, I have 20 ideas for you. You have to experiment with this. The thought process should be, how do you give them something that they'd be willing to share? So make it free for them, make it super easy for them to share. And there's so many things, and you don't even have to think too hard about it. So an example would be like, I came across a church, like a Christian church newsletter that had very few subscribers. And I just had so many different ideas. It's like, okay, you could create a prompt or like some sort of ChatGPT thing on how to write sermons, how to utilize it to edit your sermons. That's just like, and then you could just cold email people. Hey, like you've heard about ChatGPT. I write this newsletter. I don't want to waste your time, but I have this thing that's super useful to like 200 of my subscribers. Just wanted to share it with you. They click it. Okay, it's a lead magnet. And boom, done.
Yeah. This, so it's interesting. You were doing the cold DMs, cold comments on TikTok, cold emails, whatever. You're clearly like somebody who is so determined and like willing to put in the work. And I think, I don't know, I think a lot of times people think, like when somebody listens to like a My First Million or whatever, it's like, oh, that's easy. I can make a newsletter and make money off of it. And obviously it's a ton of work. So my question is, how much time on average do you think you were spending per week on AI for work? And like, how much time do you think like baseline somebody would need to invest in, let's say a weekly newsletter to make it good, to make it work, to achieve goals?
Yeah. I wasn't the most disciplined in regards to sticking with my own schedule or keeping up with a really
full-time job, like, too,
strong. Right? Yeah, full-time job, new dad. But those are just excuses. You can figure out a way
around. Those aren't excuses.
I think at the bare minimum, a minimum of 3 hours a week to write a weekly newsletter would be necessary. And you genuinely have to be passionate because, like, kind of like what you said about the TikTok creator that you're interviewing, that trend of authentic content is so hard to fake, and it's so easy to resonate with because we as consumers at this point, we know when something has been like catered to us. And we could just see with the data that we don't respond to that anymore, which is why asking somebody about how much they get paid is so interesting to so many people. So it's like, yeah, you can't be fake about it. A minimum of 3 hours, and you have to love what you do.
Yeah, I really the loving what you do, I think, is like, that's almost another one I would put in there. I said those two pieces of advice I give of like, just start and also like have a niche. I think the loving what you do has to be third. Like, I talked to somebody last week who they have a finance newsletter, and it's like, oh, we're just talking about this with our friends anyways. Or a few weeks ago, I interviewed a guy who has a fantasy Premier League a newsletter. He's like, I'm already consuming all this information. So like, to, you know, boil it down into a newsletter is not so much more. Like, I don't know, you a couple times during this conversation, I've thought of like things you've said that made me think of the meme where there's like the guy mining for diamonds, and then there's the other guy who's giving up and he's like about to hit the diamonds. Which I think is so much what this is. Like, you got to be willing to just keep going, like, no matter what, because it's just what you're gonna do on, like, you know, 7:30 p.m. on a Thursday night anyways, right?
Exactly.
Moving on, I want to talk about monetization before you sold it. Like, obviously you had some ads, I think. So if I'm correct, unless some were deleted, you had an ad in your third newsletter. But actually, that is a question I'm curious. There's 21, looking at the archive of the AI for Work Beehive page, there's 21 newsletters. Is that all there was?
I think it was probably less. A lot less. Yeah, it's just like, one, I wasn't good at the maintaining of it. And then two, I really didn't want to post, like, share a crappy newsletter. Like, that would have just hurt my heart. And I think that's a big problem with creators I think that's a big problem with me. Because, like, I think a lot of other creators would just be like, yo, I have to publish, so I will. But I was like, yo, I can't publish something I don't want to read myself. So I really struggled with that. I have no advice on that. That's definitely something I need to learn. It's just like, how do you do more consistent content when you don't find the content very useful? So yeah, I struggled with the timeline. But
I guess, yeah, no, that first off, that's all really interesting, because I really resonate with what you're saying. Like, I agree, yeah. If it's not good, don't put it out. And like, writing this newsletter, writing Creator Spotlight, like, I every Friday morning, I'm putting one out. So it's like, it takes a lot of work. And it's like, sometimes some take longer to write than others, or like takes longer to like find the next person I should interview because I want it to be well curated. Sometimes that takes longer. Like, sometimes the conversation like meandered a lot, and it was a really fun conversation, but then it's like, how do I like boil this down? And like, it just like, to me, in my own experience, getting the consistency is just about like you have that deadline. And so like that is what is the structure that you're following. And then everything else, it's like, you might just have to put in an extra 10 hours of work to like make this issue good, which is hard. And like, you know, when you have a full-time, like for me, this is my full-time job. So that's, you know, it's kind of built into the thing. But anyways, the question was like, it looks like you had your first sponsored newsletter in the third issue on October 5th, presented by AE Studio. So how did you get this on your third issue?
So that was with, there was a tweet from Priya on your team. I believe that was her name. And she was in charge of ads. So she made a tweet. She's like, hey, we have a couple ad spots left. I've never had an ad at this point. I was like, please. So I just emailed her. And she's like, okay, cool. All good to go. If you could just publish it by this date. And I was like, okay, cool. I think I made about $60 on that first one. At that point, I was just like, okay, there's an opportunity here. Like this is real.
How many subscribers did you have, by the way, at that point? Do you know?
I think it was close to like 7,000 or 8,000 at that
point. Oh, wow.
Sorry. That's not true. Cause I think I started publishing when I had 7,000 or 8,000. I think I had probably about 10 to 12 at that point.
Wait, you didn't even start publishing the newsletter until you had 7,000 or 8,000?
I had one, but then I didn't do anything weekly or ongoing. But I was emailing each person automatically. Like there was an automatic personalized email that would go out for every subscriber. So yeah, there was communication between me and the subscribers, but there wasn't like a weekly newsletter that was on a good schedule. So like I started this thing in, I think it was June, July, and the third one came out in October. So
that's insane. That's almost like, I mean, it's like stretching the definition of what a newsletter is. It's like, sign up for this and like, I will talk to you directly, like at least once, but like, don't expect a regular newsletter. That obviously it works though. And I do want to touch on that for a second. Like, cause you said you hand emailed every person, which I respect. And like, whenever anybody replies to Creator Spotlight, if it's more than just like, you know, okay, or if it's an actual like message, I'll reply. And like, I enjoy doing that. So I don't know, how was that for you? And like, you must have sent thousands of emails to people, right?
Yeah. Okay. So there was automation involved in this aspect
of course.
So what would happen was as soon as they would sign up, they would get an email that would just say, hey, you're one of my first 1,000 subscribers. And I just recently launched this thing. You could consider me one of your new friends in the AI space. I'd love to just hear how you're using AI today in your work. And then anybody who would reply, then we would go into a nice in-depth conversation, but there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of replies. I was sending out thousands of emails. My email domain got blocked from Google like twice because it was just like, you have exceeded. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I was just sending an email to everybody. And there was little variation in that initial email. But the messaging was just like, hey, you're one of my first few subscribers. I'd love to just hear about like why and what you do.
That's smart. No, I really like that too. It's like that. I mean, if I had received that, that's like warms me to you. And it's like, oh, I got to reply to this. This guy is like, I want to help him out.
He's trying.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying his best. And it's relatable. Okay. But going back to, so ads, monetization. So obviously this story ends with you selling the newsletter, but between the starting and the selling, how else did you monetize? Was it just more ads? What's the story there?
Yeah. I've thought about this so many different ways of like how I could go ahead and monetize this. And I just kept running into the easiest method would just be using the Beehive platform. But even with that, like I think the most I made on an ad through the Beehive platform at one point was close to like $200 on one send, which was wonderful. And if I could just be more consistent on sending them, it would be great. So it was really to a point where I was close to like the end of the year. Of the first year or like the calendar year. And I was invited to the Beehive Slack community. And I saw there was a monetization channel and I messaged the group. I was just like, hey, I have this newsletter. I'm getting a ton of new subscribers a day, but I'm not monetizing this thing effectively. And immediately within like 2 minutes, I got a message. It's like, hey, would you consider just selling it? And I was like, maybe. He's like, what would your price be? And I told him my price would be, and he's like, cool, let's do it. And I was like, okay, that's sick. And then I was like, can I trust this guy? After a bunch of conversations, that's how the introduction got met. So like I was in the stage where I was really just learning how to optimize the monetization outside of the Beehive platform. But honestly, I think if you're consistent with just sending out regular emails, the Beehive platform makes it so easy. It's like stupidly easy.
Yeah, that's so amazing that you like did this thing without actually having like all, you know, a typical consistent newsletter. Like, that's so funny. So I do want to ask two questions about acquisition. Number one, looking at your background, I think the last full-time job on your LinkedIn, at least before you did this, was at a beauty company that got acquired. Yeah. And obviously a company that you don't own being acquired is way different than a newsletter
for sure.
business that you wrote being acquired. But I don't know. I'm just curious if there were any similarities in those experiences for you at all.
So the beauty company was a friend of mine. He owned the company. We met in high school, and then he moved to Vancouver. He reached out to me. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I just left my current job. And he's like, yo, come down here, check this out. And we just clicked right away. And we're like, yo, let's blow this up. Let's really make this big. And one of the biggest drivers for that was just learning about new distribution channels. So this brand sold on Amazon specifically, but we were able to find new distribution channels that ended up costing us nothing. So like my main focus was, how do I acquire a customer for $0 for a real brand? And that's kind of where my whole like mindset on lead magnets came in.
Yeah,
I learned an awful lot there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the other thing is, like, I think with a newsletter, one of the unique things about it is you send it out and then you can't edit it. It's out there. And like, you know, you can on Beehive, you can go in, you can edit the post, and then it's updated on your archive. But anybody who has it in their inbox has it in their inbox. And it's like, you know, this idea of like authorship, it with like you create something, but then it belongs to the audience. Does it belong to the, et cetera, all that kind of thing. With For sure. like selling your business, you're doing that on a whole nother scale where it's like, it's not an email. It's like an entire business that you built, that you created, that you poured yourself into, and now it's out there, and it's somebody else's to change even and do with what they will. Like, what's that experience like? Like, are you like, you know, watching it and like checking it out and like, oh, what's changed, et cetera, et cetera. What's it like the after you sell experience?
So stressful, man. Like, this is your baby.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. I watch it like a hawk. I literally watch it like a hawk. I see every newsletter that they're pushing out now. They're doing a great job. They're doing a wonderful job, but I can't complain on that end. But like when I see something like Shopify putting it in their video and it's no longer owned by me, and people still message me on LinkedIn to this date, we're like, hey, I really love your prompts. I really love the newsletter. I don't own it anymore. it's hard, I would say. But I think that's because I put a lot of love into it. And I think like it has to have soul, right? Like, and I think that could be a weakness for many people. Whereas like, just hit publish. But yeah, man, it's been challenging not owning it, because I have so many ideas of like what I want to do with it and like where I want to take it now.
Well, okay, so where you want to take it now? I think you mentioned when we first talked that you do probably want to start another newsletter. I'd love to hear about that. Like, what's your motivation for the next one? Because now it's like, it can't just be the same. Like, oh, I just want to, you know, I care about AI and I want to start a newsletter. You've been there. You've learned. So what's next in terms of your next newsletter?
Yeah. Okay.
Why do you want to start another one?
I think every business should have a newsletter. I think it's stupid not to. Right? Like, there's it's so hard to get in front of your own customer, which is so stupid. Like, the fact that you could post on your Facebook page or on your Instagram and no one who follows you is going to see it is like such a 2024 problem. So it's like, how do you actually get in front of people and actually get them to see it? It's going to be through email. And how do you define your champions? It's people who open those emails. It's people who engage with those emails. So yeah, I think every business on this planet should have a newsletter. And I think they should put effort into it. And I think they should build a community around it. And I think it pays dividends. Mm-hmm. So with that, of course, I'll set up another newsletter. My next projects, I'm focused on two things right now. My first thing is creating a TikTok agency around organic content. So creating a newsletter in that space, I think is worthwhile. Just because it's something that I'm interested in. It's something that I'm learning myself. And I just see there's such a huge opportunity for so many brands around short form. And then the second one is around local newsletters. I just think there's such a big opportunity around local newsletters, especially in Canada. I'm not sure if you're aware, but in Canada, like our news agencies here aren't allowed to post on Facebook anymore. Facebook just blocks their whole channel.
I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. So like basically, the news, like the laws here changed where they say, hey, Facebook, if you want to share our stories or well-written stories, you need to pay us. And the Facebook's like, no, I don't. Like, I just won't show your content. So Canadians don't have any social method of getting their news anymore, which creates a ton of opportunity for newsletters in this space. So I think like having a local newsletter for your specific city, town, or block, it just makes you such a powerful individual, right? Like you could do so much if you had 10, 15, 20,000 people that actually read your local newsletter. That's real revenue that you can drive for small businesses, create real advertising opportunities. So I just feel like that's such a worthwhile thing to do as a side project. So for anybody who doesn't have an idea of what newsletter to start, start a local newsletter.
I love that. I'm actually talking to somebody who did that next week for this series.
Oh, nice.
I guess one question is other platforms and the arms of the business. So there's the AI for Work website, which is clearly the lead magnet and such a valuable asset in and of itself. And then there's the newsletter. And when I look, I'm looking right now at the newsletter archive, the Beehive site, and there's the Twitter link, the LinkedIn link, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. And I looked at them all and like, you clearly, you know, like I've done for newsletters in the past, you know, I've created like the social accounts, but maybe I don't use them. It's a placeholder, whatever. Was that something that stressed you out not being on these other platforms? Like, how did you think of this like platform prioritization?
Yeah, man, of course I had jealousy around like watching Rowan from Runway post on Twitter and get like 300,000 likes, right? Like he does such a good job on that. And it's just not a skill set that I was able to build in due time. It's something that I think many people practice and try to figure out, but it didn't come naturally to me, and nor did I think it comes naturally to any of the guys that are just crushing it. I think it takes a lot of hard work and effort. So I think like for me, it was just like focus on the channel that's working right now, which is creating lead magnets. Because like the AI for Work was just one lead magnet. From there, I built another lead magnet that was a business planner using AI. And that one took off really well as well. And then I created like two or three that didn't take off nobody found value in. For me, it was just a focus on the channels that are working for you. And like if your goal is to be like, hey, I'm going to build a newsletter, I'm going to build it on Twitter, I think many people are underestimating how hard it is to actually grow a social channel. Like it does require a great deal of effort, experimentation. And I just don't think it's the lowest hanging.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Martin from AI Tool Report said the exact same thing. Like he couldn't hack it on Twitter. Other people were doing it way better. It was too late to catch up. So he, you know, he had money to put into ads. So he did.
Yeah.
That worked.
Yeah. Dude, I read that one. I was so impressed with what he ended up doing. And like, and I don't know, man, I came across him on LinkedIn with one of his posts had like 3,000-4,000 shares. So I think he's pretty, underestimating how good he was at that. But yeah, man, I feel like the one area that I could have improved on was around paid, which is why I was very focused on like, how do I monetize this better? Because I think a lot of creators monetize through boosts and through like the Spark Loops. Mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense, but because I was sending everybody to a lead magnet that was on a website, I wasn't able to put Spark Loop on it or the Beehive boost on it. I've been messaging on the Slack group like, hey, when are you guys gonna introduce this? But you know, hopefully soon. I was very focused on trying to figure that out just before I sold it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about around your story with AI for Work?
Okay, so I started building it in public by just posting it on LinkedIn.
Yes, actually, let's talk about it in public, sorry.
Yeah, so I started building it in public because, I never really dedicated too much time and energy building a social profile. But I wanted to build it in public for a couple. The main reason I wanted to build it in public was so that other people can really give me advice so I could learn faster. And that didn't happen. What ended up happening was just like a very big like encouragement fest. Like, oh, cool job, great, we're supporting you. Then I look at my subscribers, I'm like, no, you're not. You're not supporting me. I had said my main goal was to build it in public so that I could get community buy-in, but also to get just the advice from others. And I found that it was like super vulnerable to build something in public. I'm gonna do it again. I'm for sure. I think anything I build, I'm gonna build it in public at this point. But I need to learn more about how others are benefiting from this, because like I don't know if it really helped me versus like exposed me to more sharing my ideas for others to take. So I think building in public is super interesting, but even when I watch other people build in public on Twitter, I'm just not sure what the added benefits ended up being, because people don't tend to give you advice. It tends to just be a lot of like clapping for you. It felt fake at some point. Like by the time I was near the end of that build in public phase, it just felt like, oh, now I feel like I'm reporting accomplishments versus like really thinking through the problems, which is what I was hoping to do.
That's interesting. I'm just trying to think, like I've seen some people do it. Tyler, the Beehive CEO, he does it. He's really good at it. I talked to this woman, Jade Bufong Phillips, a few weeks ago for Creator Spotlight. She does it. And like for her, she doesn't have that many subscribers. It's 120, but it like for her too, it's this thing where it's like for her, it helps her process things where like every week she puts out this 2,500 word newsletter that has like a win, a loss, a few lessons, any resources she gathered, and like any hacks she figured out. And so for her, she was like, this is a way for me to process this journey and like the difficulties of it. And it's very vulnerable, right? And then, but she had also like tried to do it in the first place, just as like a founder advice thing. And it didn't work. There was no point to it. There was literally no point, like edge, you know? But then she changed it to this concept, 240 days to raise. And then that's what brought me in. Like actually somebody came into Creator Spotlight as a new subscriber and told me about it. And I was like, that's a cool concept, 240 days to raise. And that drew me in, you know? And then I was like, actually, I want to talk to this person because this is cool. The other thing with advice, when you said that, it reminded me of the last time I applied for a job. And, you know, I sent my resume, my portfolio site to a few different friends and stuff. And they'd be like, maybe they'd have one or two items of feedback and they'd be like, looks good. Great. You know, but not much else. And I wasn't getting like enough like replies. But then I sent it to another person who like spent time on it. And then we had a call and he talked to me about it for an hour. And then shortly after that, I started getting more replies. And so it's like, my point there is just like, most people aren't actually going to give you that advice because it takes time, right? Like to give really good advice, you got to sit down with it, get in the zone, spend a couple hours, whatever it is, you know, you got to like actually shift your focus. But now I'm just rambling a little bit, but with the building in public, when I think of the benefit, like, I guess sometimes it's like when you're doing good, people will just like it. And like, you're just, you know, like I think with Beehive, like Tyler Denk, he puts out great content about Beehive doing good. And like, that's great because people love to see that, right? Like, but when, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like the other benefits. People just like to see behind the scenes. They like to see something that they feel like generally they're not supposed to. And it goes back to the way we started this conversation with like talking about this salary transparent street thing. Like people want to know things that generally they're not supposed to know. So I think that's the key, is like, you do have to share that. And like, maybe there's some, you got to protect your ideas, whatever. Like Tyler has started doing the sending out the investor updates from the very beginning. He just started that like a couple months ago. So they're like a couple years old or whatever. So he's protected in that way, but it's still this thing that you're not supposed to see. And that is exclusive primary source knowledge. So I don't know. I guess I'm trying to figure out like, what should you do to build in public? And I think it's about like, maybe it's just as simple as like, if what you are sharing isn't like primary source forbidden knowledge, why should anyone care? Maybe. I don't know. Do you agree?
I think you hit it on the head in regards to the creator who just changed the framework, right? Yeah. Like, it's no longer the ask a founder, it's 240 days to raise. That is just so much more interesting. So like, I don't know if people are genuinely interested in like, hey, you want to watch me start my brand new newsletter? Have 100 subscribers, like it might be friends and family, but yeah, I think it's what certainly people are interested in behind the scenes. They're interested in the authentic aspect of it, and there's questions involved. Like people do ask questions, you do get more DMs. I think what Tyler does really well, in all honesty, is he's in the comments, man. Like he's genuinely like responding to comments, which is just like, I don't know how you guys manage your time there at Beehive, but like I still have emails in my inbox where he replied to like customer service inquiries. I'm just like, what? Like, I know how much you guys are doing from your investor reports. I see you. Like, how do you have the time to do this? Which is like it humanizes the brand, it humanizes the individual, and it just like helps you resonate a better connection. So yeah, that's the one thing. But like from Building in Public, like there's a lot of creators on Twitter that build in public, and I think a lot of them are finding that they end up attracting just the wrong audience. They end up attracting other people who are building similar products, which is cool to build your network. I think there might be a level of scale where you have to get to like Tyler's level, where you have like thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are interested in your business for it to be worthwhile. But like you said, like there's a diamond in the rough, right? Like you could end up having a 1-hour conversation with somebody who's super knowledgeable and it opens doors.
Something I thought of yesterday that I've really been enjoying just kind of like thinking about is this idea of an authenticity ceiling.
Okay, I read that post.
Yeah, the authenticity post. Yeah.
Okay, I read your post, man. I love it, man. That really struck a chord with me. Because I think copywriting for successful executives at this point is very like prominent. But you know, I think it's so hard to be authentic, and it's so
because it's not even just about like outsourcing it. It's about you doing it yourself and like make, you know, because you could go in and type something on LinkedIn, but maybe you're trying too hard in a way that's too markety or whatever, and it smells fake to people. So it's like, I actually hadn't thought of that part yet, but like that is part of it too. It's like, you don't even need to outsource to like toe the line with this. It could even just be what you're doing, which is kind of what you're talking about with Building in Public. Like, how do you make it more authentic than authentic? You know, how do you make it more real than real? Which I don't know, but maybe it's part of it.
Yeah. No, you hit it. Like, okay. Yeah. The post you wrote really struck a chord with me. Cause like I looked at it, I was like, you know what? That term should be a term. right.
We're making it one.
Yeah. Right. Somebody ended up, like I was reading, just through Twitter. Somebody said that like the future of advertising is a girl in her pajamas, on TikTok, monotoning, like in a monotone voice, saying a product she likes. Yeah. And I think that's so true, because like we've become desensitized from like the pie polish and so on. And I think that's why salary transparency is so interesting to so many people, because you it's real.
No, it's good. I think that's a good note to end it on, where we've covered a lot. But before we cut the recording, is there anything you want to plug right now, or anywhere people should find you online so you can start Building in Public better?
Just on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. No, nothing that I'm interested in plugging. I think like the main reason why I wanted to do this, this one, is I've had the opportunity to talk to like hundreds of creators now, just through the process of research. And I find like the one thing that most people are interested in is how to get to their first 10,000 subscribers. And my advice there is just like, don't look at the traditional methods. You know, do outreach, go find ways to figure out, like the main thing you should focus on is how do you get in front of your user, and how do you give them something that they can't refuse. And you could get your first 1,000 pretty damn easily by just putting in a little bit of effort of outreach. Go to them versus them come to you.